Welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast, and I'm Coach Benton Williams. The VA Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. In today's episode, the president of the Africa Chapter for the Society of Incentive Travel Excellence, SITE, Tess Proust, delves into the state of the continent's incentive travel market and looks at what can be done to quicken the mice recovery. Tess, who has an accomplished career in the meeting sector, believes recent events in Fitur and the Arabian travel market should signal a gradual restart of events in Africa. So good morning, Tess, and welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Okay. Can you tell us more about the SITE, you know, Society for Incentive Travel Excellence? What is it about?
And absolutely. What do you mean? Oh, thanks for the question, Kojo. SITE is, as you mentioned, it's the Society for Incentive Travel Excellence. It is the only association globally that is focused on incentive travel. Now, for those who don't know, incentive travel is possibly the greatest motivator for employees and distributors and then all those channels. And it's really proved to be something that people work really hard for. They're looking forward to that once in a lifetime trip. And it's one of the best ways to retain your staff as well.
Okay. Now, in terms of your activities, what do you do? If they say SITE, what are your modus operandi, and in the mining sector, what are your roles?
Well, there are several roles that we play. First of all, we've got the SITE Foundation. The foundation is to a large extent responsible for the research that comes out of our industry, and we've had very interesting results in recent times. We also spend a fair amount of time on education. You know, it's very important for our suppliers, our DMCs across the board to understand the values of the client, the company, the culture of the company. We have to ask the right questions in order to create the best possible program for a particular group. And with incentive travel, you cannot do a copy and paste one size fits all. It just doesn't work. Each program has got to be individually curated according to what the client needs are. Okay. That is our programs in short.
Okay, so obviously, it's more customized and it's, adapted to the environment and the people and what is the things that motivate their
100%
travel. What are some of your initiatives that you've undertaken, i.e. from since the onset of COVID? Because, I remember you, first of all, commissioned a report, you released a report of this, the state of the sector, and then you went further to have webinars and engage with very important stakeholders in the sector.
Absolutely. Kojo, I think the report you're referring to was a result from the summit that we held in June last year, and I can't believe it's almost a year later. It was a very insightful discussion with stakeholders from across Africa. We had many heads of convention bureaus, aviation, DMCs, hoteliers, suppliers from across the board, airports companies, discussing what can we do to get ourselves ready and open for business. We asked ourselves the question, are we ready to open? And across the board, we realized that, from a COVID protocol point of view, our industry is automatically geared towards safety. So health and safety is kind of second nature to us. With the COVID restrictions that came along, that was just adding another layer to an industry that is already very well regulated when it comes to health and safety. So yes, June last year already, we were ready to roll. All we needed to do was get governments to sit around a table and agree on aligning those protocols. And unfortunately, as you've seen a year down the line, that is not happening. And it's really causing chaos and mayhem in our industry. And I think it's very important to keep driving that message to our policymakers, is align those policies, then economies can actually start functioning again.
What is the level of engagement post the summit with you know, government or leaders in our sector?
Right, it's ongoing, especially from, you know, just on the, let me talk from South African perspective. In April last year, we formed the first South African Events Council. Now that is made up of 14 different event associations, and we're talking across the board from exhibitions to conferences, PCOs, you know, the ICAs and SARCIs and all those. I think one thing that COVID has shown us is how resilient our industry is, and that collaboration is absolutely key. And we've been having weekly meetings since April last year, shortly after our lockdown, to find ways to communicate with government and other stakeholders to you know, find solutions, you know, whether it's financial relief, whether it is, you know, increasing the number of people we're allowed in our venues. Because one of the first things that's happened is that our entire supply chain died. And our government, for instance, did not quite get how deep that supply chain goes. So I think the iceberg model is still the best, because, you know, if you look at a conference, you're only looking at the top of the iceberg. But if you start thinking about all the suppliers down the line, and in fact, at the time, I was having a conversation with one of my suppliers who runs a group of restaurants. And she said to me, Tess, in one of my restaurants, I use 1,000 eggs a day. Now imagine from one day to the next, we are in lockdown. What happens to all those eggs across the country with the restaurants and the hotels and the coffee shops and the bakeries that now suddenly don't work? And that's just one example of an ingredient, a supplier that's suddenly no longer there. But anyway, so we've been engaging, and we've really been driving, you know, financial support. We've been, you know, trying to convince the banks to not, you know, foreclose on people's home loans, on cars, on debt payments. And we have been relatively successful. And I have to make a mention of one of our Events Council members, Mr. Sharif Baker. He's taken the initiative and engaged with our Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture. And that minister, Natiem Tetwa, has been incredibly supportive, and he instructed Sharif to set up a task team, a ministerial task team. I'm on that team with him, and we are looking at all these daily aspects, you know, as I just mentioned, even school fees, where we can find ways to find relief to help people cope while there is no business. Because this, of course, affects the likes of your audiovisual people. How many freelancers are out there with no events, no work? What do they do? So it's been a collective effort dealing with government and other stakeholders to try and keep our pipeline of suppliers alive.
Okay, excellent. I think that it is this time of the season, or during this COVID, that we need to work together, you know, in terms of partnership, to be able to, at least even not addressing all the problems, have some remedial steps that we can all take to reshape our sector that has been so much battered, you know, because of COVID. Now, let's come to the youth program that I think you put up 2 or 3 weeks ago. Tell us about it, for SIDE.
I am so happy about that program. You know, we've been trying for the longest time to get a young leader program together. There are some SIDE chapters globally, such as Ireland and Texas, that's been doing so well with their young leader program. And we've just been struggling to get it off the ground for many reasons. And one of them being that the bosses don't want to buy into it. But, you know, the important thing is, from a youth perspective, we need future leaders. How do we create future leaders if we do not engage them? The Young Leader Conference usually takes place in Las Vegas just before SIDE America every year. And unfortunately, last year, the Las Vegas event couldn't happen. But here's now one of the advantages with the virtual event that took place is people who previously couldn't afford to go to Las Vegas could now virtually attend the conference for, I think it was $95 per person to join. So many of our young people in Africa actually hopped onto that conference, and the results were stellar. You know, we've seen such beautiful leadership coming out of those conversations. I was a fly on the wall in some of those chat rooms, you know, where they had breakaways discussing certain topics. And the initiatives that came out was just so heartwarming. And I realized, you know what, let's just do a virtual young group to start. And we literally launched it about a month ago, and we've got, well, we have four amazing people who joined, two from Rwanda, one from South Africa, one from Egypt. And then last week, another brilliant young man from Morocco joined the committee. So now I just need somebody from West Africa, and we've got the entire continent represented. Their main objective is to look at where are industries at within Africa, because obviously we're going to get different results in different regions, and where are the opportunities for growing incentive travel. Because as we know, Africa is definitely tourism ready, some countries are meetings ready, not all countries are incentive ready. So that's ongoing education, you know, through our formal education programs and certification, but also through master classes and through online workshops, you know, helping people understand the importance of incentive travel and how it's different to a standard tour group for leisure. So, you know, having those understandings, the infrastructure, the security and safety of a destination, perceived sometimes so. I mean, we came across one country last week where a client said that they don't feel safe going into a certain country because there are guards in army clothing with machine guns. Well, the government put them there because they felt that maybe foreign tourists would feel better if there's somebody with a machine gun. It's actually the opposite way around. So it's those kind of things that we need to dig into and try and understand, you know, what works and what doesn't work. You know, it's all perceptions. But those are the kinds of initiatives that we are undertaking, and workshops coming up. I actually have a meeting with them later today to discuss our strategy moving forward. So over the next few months, look out for the young leader workshops. We're going to do a lot of engagement. We want to hear from our young leaders across the continent what works for young people, because that's our future incentive market. Those are our future leaders in travel. So we need to listen to them and see what makes them tick.
No, I think that's a very brilliant initiative. Now, as a head of the site Africa, what are some of your plans to drive membership, especially in Africa? Because it's more, like you said, it's more leisure driven. How do you you know, convince them of how they can position themselves, you know, respect to not just sites, but, you know, business events and MICE to be part mm-hmm. of how, I mean, I'm not saying that every destination ought to focus on business events, but the opportunities that, you know, it offers, even if you are not doing it as a core business, how do you drive membership? Because you're a membership-based organization.
Right. Thanks for that, Koja. I think what's very important is, first of all, for our potential members to understand the essence of incentive travel, but then the numbers speak for itself. And I'm very happy to share with you that we got our first South African surveys back. The results are back from a survey we did locally. And it compares very well to the ITI research that was done in recent years by the foundation. Now, incentive travel, even though the travel times might be shorter than your average leisure travel, let's say 5 nights in a destination, your yield is far higher. Yes. We're talking about anything from $4,500 to $5,500 per person on a program. The impact from, you know, it depends on where they come from. Typically, your North American clients would be the highest spenders. But it was very interesting in last year's results, Mexico was the highest, and even India sitting at a respectable $6,000 per person. So one needs to consider the yield of these programs, but along with those price tag comes the expectations. And you know, we need to make sure that our members understand the client expectations, and that's why our training and our education is absolutely critical to make sure that our DMCs within Africa deliver top-notch programs. And it's also interesting to understand that not all incentive groups expect glamour, glitz, five-star deluxe. There are some groups out there that would spend less on a hotel but more on the experience. So take a country like Rwanda, for instance. So you know, the gorilla permits are $1,500 per person, which quite often is like half or a third of the total budget. But for a small group, they would be happy to stay in a good four-star hotel, but rather spend the money they would have spent on a five-star hotel and put that towards the gorilla experience. So that is something to consider. Then also, you know, from a membership point of view, the networking is absolutely critical. And that is something I have found, you know, this past year, where our leader, Rebecca Wright, who's now our executive director, she initiated a weekly phone call with all the chapter presidents. And that was the best thing she could have done. Whereas previously, I knew personally about maybe three of the 30 presidents that we have across the globe. I can now safely say I've got 30 new friends, you know, after a year bonding, you know, trying to find solutions, how are we going to support our members, etc. So we came up with a whole bunch of initiatives to help our members, including the Moira Hearn Fund, one of our past members. A fund was set up in her name, and members who were current in 2020 could actually apply to this fund, and they got up to a 75% discount for the 2021 members. So we've almost retained all our members going into 2021, and I really would like to see that going forward. And also very happy to say that we've already got six new members since the beginning of this year in the African chapter. And what I see are people that are keen to engage, they want to network, they want to learn. You know, as long as that passion is there, we'd be able to do so much more together.
You have to have much more clarity on the membership. Is it an organizational membership or individual membership for those who like to join?
That's a very good question, Kojo. The site membership essentially is for the individual. So if you join and you're working for American Express and you move across to, say, Rennie's, that membership goes with you. It's really focused on the individual integrity. You do, however, get a group membership, and this is particularly useful for larger companies, like a convention bureau, for instance, where you can get a group membership for three or five or eight people. And that then becomes a group membership for the company. And then if people move around, then that membership stays within the company. So you have both options.
Okay. And people who like to, you know, be part of Site Africa, how do they reach out? Do they go to your website, or I mean, how does it work? These days that we are all virtual, how do they communicate and reach out to your office?
Right. Okay, thank you for that. Our website is actually a work in progress as we speak, so the website's not working at the moment. But if they go to our social media, we are everywhere, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, all of that, and they can get hold of me through that.
Okay, so as we wrap up our conversation, what is your projection of the mining sector, and you know, in terms of recovery and how it can, you know, bring back some jobs that we lost? What's your take on that? From where you sit?
Well, that is an incredibly difficult question to answer. My crystal ball is not very clear today, but what I can share with you, the projections are not looking good at the moment. You know, with the third wave coming in and countries being red listed, I mean, almost all of Africa is red listed, and I believe unnecessarily so. So we need to come up with the right PR again collectively to get ourselves removed from that red list, because that's a serious hamper for planning any corporate travel into Africa. You know, be it an association, be it an incentive group or a conference, just because of the confidence issue, which we discussed earlier. If we can start aligning those protocols, in fact, look at the small clusters like your Khaza region surrounding the Victoria Falls. You've got four countries there where you've got 15-minute border crossing. You can do all four countries in one day. Why can we not align those protocols? You know, come in with one PCR test, do rapid testing across the border, allow people to visit those four destinations while they have the opportunity. We can do the same in East Africa between Ghana, Uganda, and Kenya, for instance. Until we have that, I think we are going to struggle to see movement in incentive business in particular. Meetings are starting to recover on a domestic level, but not until the end of 2021, most of it 22 and onwards. Incentive travel, I think, might be the last to recover due to our corporate clients, our decision makers, not wanting to take the liability of people either getting sick or getting quarantined while they're on one of these trips. The reality is it's going to take another year to recover. The question is, how many companies can survive without cash flow until business comes back? And I think that is the big concern. In the meantime, what we are experiencing is a massive brain drain, as I call it. Our skills are being decimated. People have been either businesses closed down, retrenched, furloughed. They're being absorbed into other industries. What are we going to do when business does come back? Are we going to be able to manage it, or are we going to be stuck with our pants around our ankles and not able to cope with the business? So those are some hard questions we need to ask ourselves, and what can we do about it?
But the good news, obviously, from the Mai's point is, we are happy to see a FITU take place. Last week, in Madrid. At the same time, the Arabian travel market in Dubai. You didn't have the same numbers, obviously, but again, it is a start that brings some confidence that obviously, when we put all the precautions in place, we are able to restart tourism and much more so MICE, because also we have to be wary of people who are so cynical or pessimist about restart of our sector, because whatever that you see in now, we are still traveling. People are holding events. So what is it that we can do? I mean, we can have some cap ceiling, etc. But I believe that as we push for tourism restart, we need to be bold to be able to put something out there. It was so refreshing to see this event come up, and you see people again. I mean, we're not seeing them now. FITU usually would do 50,000, but this year was only 5,000. But that's a step, a step that I'm hoping that other government and national agencies may take a cue to restart the sector.
I totally agree with you, Kojo. And those events really should be used as case studies. I mean, from the SA Events Council point of view, we've done numerous proof of concept events in South Africa, including exhibitions. Late December last year, just before we were going into our second wave lockdown, we actually had an event for 250 people on a beach in Cape Town, where rapid testing was done. We had 10, 15 minutes for the test. So everybody who entered that venue were clean. It's quite interesting because they actually did pick up some people during the testing that had COVID and didn't know it. They were immediately referred to formal clinics and proper PCR tests done. But that event was 100% clean. Same thing with the restart event they had at the Johannesburg Exhibition Center, where they put up an exhibition and even invited government to come and see we can do these events safely. And certainly the FITU and those events, our governments need to look at that and see that as an industry, we know what we're doing. There's we've also got a few contradictions here where we can do 50% of capacity in a casino. We can do exhibitions in a shopping mall where there is absolutely no control over the crowds or proper COVID measures, but we may not do it in a formal exhibition hall or in a conference room. So yeah, we're still fighting with that one. But you know what, we remain optimistic. The Events Council is working very hard at battling those things and also making sure that our people who are not working at the moment are at least able to put food and basics on the table. So yes, all I can say is watch the space. We are not giving up.
And Lou, we can't give up now. Now, before we let you go, can you tell us more about yourself? We know you also an MD for Crystal Event Africa, and you are a lady of many parts. Take us through what you're doing if you're not.
Yeah, many hats.
Yes.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So I am a DMC. I'm based in Cape Town. My company, Crystal Events Africa, was founded in 2009. But I work all over Africa and absolutely love the continent, love the people, love the passion, the hospitality experience. It's absolutely amazing. I also love to get my hands dirty with the training, running masterclasses, educating industry at various levels at every opportunity. I previously was a hotelier. I was also a lecturer in a hotel school. I was also a hotel assessor doing hotel grading. All sorts of things involved in the food and beverage and event industry, and going back 35 years. I actually started out studying law after I left school, not because I wanted to, I had to, and I ran. It just wasn't for me, and I landed in the hotel industry quite by accident. I thought, let me take up a holiday job in the Holiday Inn in the town where I was living, and I ended up on the in-house management training program, and that was me since 1985. Here I am.
Wow, that's a world of experience that we all need to tap into. Tess, it's been fascinating having this conversation with you, and I hope that our sector sees some recovery measures put in place, especially in Africa, for us to be able to meet again very soon.
Fantastic. Absolutely. We're all crossing fingers and I'm praying that we can get to that point in the very near future.
Thank you so much, Tess.
Thank you, Coach.